How's it going today, guys? And welcome back to another episode of Locked On Clippers, the official LA Clippers podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Garrett Korpang. In addition to this show, I cover the Clippers for Clipperholics, which is FanSided's one and only Clippers blog. You can find me on Twitter at G-A Korpenning. That's G-A-C-H-O-R-P-E-N-N-I-N-G. There you can feel free to send me questions, comments, and anything else you feel relates to LA Clippers basketball. Welcome back to the show, guys. Happy to be here on this Thursday afternoon. I apologize, the show coming a little bit later today. I had a dentist appointment earlier today that kind of got in the way of my prep and that sort of thing. So, again, I apologize, the show being a little bit later, but I hope it's still coming at a good time for you, and I thank you for tuning in. To start things off today, I'll be talking in-depth about the NBA draft lottery. I'll go over how it works, the new rules, past lottery selections, and what we could expect when it all goes down on Tuesday. After that, I'll get into my Thursday segment, Player Showcase, where I'll be comparing Tobias Harris and Blake Griffin's respective seasons for the LA Clippers. The numbers just might shock you. And to close, I'll talk about everything that's going on with the Toronto Raptors, sometimes referred to as Clippers East. So guys, we'll get started by talking about the NBA Draft Lottery, which is next Tuesday night. And while it might not seem that interesting, the Clippers do have a chance to make a splash and land the top overall pick. The NBA Draft Lottery is also far from complicated, so if you're thinking this is just an easy way to get the pick, it's really not that way at all. With the odds that each team in the lottery has to hit the number one overall pick, and the odds that each team has to hit the top three overall pick, predicting how the whole thing will go down and trying to work your mind around it before it actually happens isn't so easy. The Clippers are currently projected to land picks number 12 and 13, 12 via the Detroit Pistons, thanks to the Blake Griffin trade, and the 13th pick being their own. However, the Clippers do have a 2.2% shot at landing in the top three, only if it comes from their own pick, though. The pick acquired from the Pistons was a 2018 first-round pick with protection added on, and protection is sort of like insurance in a way, so if the pick falls within the range of the team's protection they put on it, it goes back to that original team that owned it. So, for example, to sum that up for you, the Pistons pick we got is top four protected, meaning if the balls fall right for Detroit and they secure one of the top four picks in this year's draft, the Clippers will lose the Pistons pick. But it's not all bad, I promise you that. That doesn't mean the pick is gone for good. If it does fall from the top four for the Pistons only, if our pick is the top four, we know that's ours, we keep it, whatever. But if the Pistons pick falls in the top four, the Clippers will then receive Detroit's 2019 first-round pick, which is also top four protected. The cycle will go on for 2 to 3 more years, whereas if the cycle is still going in 2021, the Clippers will get Detroit's unprotected first-rounder, or until the pick falls out of the top four, this via ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. So, to put that in simpler terms there, every year we will have the Pistons pick until their pick falls out of the top four. Once it does, that pick is going to become ours, and then every year after that, that pick won't be, we won't have the rights to that pick if it's you know, out of that protection area there. But if it does go on far enough, and if somehow by some stroke of luck the Pistons do get a top four pick every year until 2021, that 2021 pick is unprotected, meaning if they get top four pick again, it's ours no matter what. So the cycle is going to end in a few years here. However, it's very unlikely that it gets to that point in the first place. So just plan this year on it not being a top four protected pick, or it not being top four pick for the Pistons, since their odds of landing a pick in that spot are very slim as it is. So if we end up with a Detroit's pick and our own pick in this year's lottery, that's it. We won't get another pick from the Pistons. It's only if it falls in the top four. So then technically, the best case scenario for this year's draft would be for the Clippers to get the top overall pick with their own selection, which again, very unlikely, but still possible, and have the Pistons pick be as close as possible to the top four without actually being in it, so therefore pick number five. The odds of doing that are probably about the same as Clippers having to win the title next season, so don't bet on it happening. But, you know, anything's possible. We've seen some wild stuff in the lottery before. Just a few years back, 2013 NBA draft, the Cavs had a 15% chance of landing the number one overall pick and they got it. So that's not the craziest thing that's ever happened, but it's something that's happened recently that we can look at as an example of saying, hey, you know, this team might have the best odds, but there's still a chance that we could land that pick. And with those picks, like I mentioned, the 1 and the 5, which, again, it's probably not going to happen. Like, don't plan on it. Don't take what I'm saying right now as, like, well, that's going to happen, because it's not going to. But with those picks, the Clippers could draft some really incredible talent. DeAndre Ayton is the top prospect in this year's draft. He is a 7-foot center out of the University of Arizona and is looking to be one of the NBA's biggest studs over the next couple seasons and so on if he does develop like he's expected to. And while guys like Michael Porter Jr. and Jaren Jackson or even Trae Young should still be around for pick number 5. But again, like I said, don't plan on that because the odds are very, 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 very against it. Instead, we should plan to end up with the picks we're projected to have, numbers 12 and 13, as it's the most likely thing that's going to happen. As you've heard me talk about in the past episodes, there should still be some great talent available at that spot, so don't feel like that's a consolation prize just because what we expected happened did happen. That's still 2 picks in a very talented lottery class, one of the most talented in the past few seasons now. So if there's ever a time for the team to have 2 top lottery picks like that, this is the year to do it, and you know, we got very lucky with that. And given the fact that the Clippers haven't had a lottery pick since 2010, this will be unexplored territory for a lot of the newer fans. Now, most fans usually aren't going to watch the draft lottery if the team isn't in it. So the whole process is really exciting. Again, it's pretty unpredictable, but at the same time, it's predictable with the way the odds work and that kind of thing. But it's an experience. It's fun to watch. It's exciting because you know you never know what's going to happen. There's always that chance of some surprise team grabbing a pick higher than they were projected to grab in the first place, but it still should be very exciting for those newer fans who haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet. So the most recent lottery pick in Clippers history was Al-Farouq Aminu in the 2010 NBA draft. The Clippers used their 8th overall pick to grab Aminu, which, you know, looking back now, hurts a little bit since Gordon Hayward was picked 9th overall and Paul George was picked 10th overall, 2 small forwards that both ended up becoming a lot more successful in the NBA than Aminu. Fun fact, though, Wesley Johnson was the highest-rated small forward in that draft class, despite guys like Evan Turner, Hayward, and George being taken in the same draft. So, you know, you never really do know. Guys that are great in college could end up being, you know, great, just the same amount of great as or even better in the NBA. Those guys could also end up being a lot worse. The scouts don't always get it right. Projections are never right. So not saying that a 10th pick is always going to be better than a 4th pick or so on like that, but it doesn't always mean that the talent you're getting is necessarily worse than the picks before that, as seen in one example right there in the 2010 draft. And just 1 year prior to selecting Aminu, the Clippers struck gold with the first overall pick, landing Blake Griffin in the 2009 NBA draft. And just 1 year before that, the Clippers took Eric Gordon with the 7th overall pick and DeAndre Jordan with the 35th overall. And DJ obviously was not a lottery selection that year, but still, you know, too good not to mention him. Certainly a steal at that position on the draft. So here's hoping that this year's lottery is a little more like a Blake Griffin lottery and not so much in Aminu lottery. But with those 2 picks that we're supposed to have, most likely going to have, Clippers do have great odds at landing at least one future star, hopefully, in the NBA. And funny thing, too, actually, I got to mention earlier, Eric Gordon and Al-Farouq Aminu, both lottery picks in back-to-back years there, they were both sent away in the original Chris Paul trade. So not only can you look at these players here as future franchise stars and future franchise changers and that sort of thing, but also there's nothing more valuable in most cases in a situational trade like that than top prospects and that sort of thing with high ceilings. So even if these guys don't pan out for the team, the trade value could still be pretty high in upcoming seasons, and we just might end up landing a future star again like we did a few years back with Chris Paul. So I hope all those rules make sense to you and that you have a pretty good grasp on them, because after this year, they're all changing to help combat tanking in the NBA, the league's Board of Governors approved a rule change back in September that reduces the odds of the team with the worst record of receiving the top overall pick. Instead, the teams with the three worst records will all have equal odds at the top pick, and the team with the worst record will draft no later than fifth, as opposed to the current system in which the team with the worst record drafts no later than fourth. It's all kind of a mess, but it makes sense since the NBA has been trying to crack down on tanking for a while now. But again, these rules will go into effect next season, not this year. And to give you sort of a look at how that lottery is going to look, how it's going to work, right now, the top three picks in the draft, the number one overall pick, or the team with the worst record has a 25% chance of getting the first overall pick. The team with the second worst record has something like a 17%. The team with the third worst record has like 15%. And then every year from now or from next year and on with this rule change, the top three teams will each have a 14% chance of getting the number one overall pick as opposed to it being weighted in a way like that. So moving forward, having the worst record won't necessarily mean the best odds at getting the first overall pick since two more teams are going to have the same odds you do. So still a lot of room, for change there moving forward. And if the lottery isn't unpredictable enough right now, it's certainly going to be in years to come. So now that's all out of the way, I'd like to compare the seasons that Blake Griffin and Tobias Harris had with the LA Clippers this year in this week's edition of Player Showcase. The two have very different styles of play, but in the grand scheme of things, they offered very similar levels of production this past season. If your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Clippers is listened to by 98% men and 80% of those men between the ages of 18 and 44. If that speaks to you and that's a fan base you'd like to advertise to, please give me a holler. Message me at gcorpenning@outlook.com. That's gcorpenning@outlook.com to get things started. Our rates are very reasonable, and I would love to do business with you. So guys, coming up, I'll give my take on what's happening in Toronto and why breaking up the core is the best solution. But first, it's time for Player Showcase. So this week's Player Showcase will be tackling the Tobias Harris versus Blake Griffin issue. It's been something of a discussion recently in Clippers circles on Twitter and that sort of thing. And we all know that talent-wise, Griffin is a better player than Tobias Harris. But the question I want to ask today is, who is better for the system long-term? And was the decision to trade Griffin away the right decision? So Tobias Harris, like I said, and Blake Griffin are two very different players, very different. Griffin has gone from dunking everything in sight to becoming a more well-rounded basketball player, even adding threes to his game this past season. And he's a true power forward. Griffin has always relied on his muscle more than his finesse. While on the other hand, Tobias Harris is the perfect example of a modern combo forward. Not only does Harris shoot from all over the floor, but he's one of the best shooting forwards from deep in the NBA. He's not as long as Griffin. Harris measures about 6'7", 6'8", while Griffin at 6'10". Harris also has a 6'11 wingspan as compared to Blake's 7' or sometimes 7'1 wingspan, depending on the measurements. So Griffin a little bit longer there. But however, Harris is a quicker, and he's a better shooter, and he's a more versatile player that fits the mold of today's top talent. And like I mentioned, while the two players do have their differences, they both put out similar levels of production for the LA Clippers this past season, which begs the question, is Tobias Harris a better long-term fit than Blake Griffin? And with the direction the NBA is going, it seems like Harris might be the answer. Griffin's final season with the Clippers was one of his most impressive, given he was forced into the driver's seat, a whole new role for Griffin, rather than being a sidekick like he was for the rest of his career, or most of his career with Chris Paul by his side. Griffin became the focal point of the team, drawing more attention on the floor than anyone else. And to be honest, he did very well in his new role. Griffin put together his most well-rounded statistical year to date, averaging 22.6 points, 7.9 rebounds, and 5.4 assists per game in 33 games with the Clippers. He also shot 34.2% from three-point range on 187 attempts, which you know, for most players is far from a good ratio, but still it was an improvement for Griffin, who took more threes in those 33 games this past season than he did in his first six NBA seasons combined. I just tweeted that a little bit ago. So to give you the exact raw numbers there, Griffin shot 187 threes in 33 games this past season with the Clippers, and that is compared to just over 150 in the past six seasons, not including the first six seasons, which was 410 games. So clearly Griffin's game is evolving, and it was evolving after the time he was traded. However, Harris is, like I mentioned before, a much more modern sort of forward, and I'll get into that in a second here. Griffin also shot 78.5% from the free throw line with Clippers last season, which was the highest mark of Clippers' career. But still, the Clippers are noticeably slower with Griffin on the court than with Harris on, and in an evolving NBA, pace is particularly important. And like I mentioned earlier, statistically, Griffin and Harris had very similar seasons for the Clippers this past year. You just heard Griffin's numbers, and now here are Harris's. 19.3 points, 6 rebounds, 3.1 assists in 32 games. He also shot 41.4% from deep and 80% of the free throw line. So just a refresher there, Griffin, like I mentioned, 22.6 points compared to Tobias Harris's 19.3. Griffin's 7.9 rebounds to Harris's 6, and Griffin's 5.4 assists to Harris's 3.1. However, it's the percentages where Harris starts to win out, and I'll get deeper into this as time goes on. But like I mentioned, Griffin shot 34.2% from three, Harris 41.4, and Griffin 78.5 from the free throw line, Harris 80%. And what's uncanny, what's pretty ironic here is that both players actually played exactly 34.5 minutes per game in their respective seasons with Clippers. And while Griffin's numbers are a few points better in each non-percentage category, Griffin's usage rate was roughly 6 points higher than that of Harris's. Griffin's close to 30%, Harris is close to 24%. So what I'm saying there is, if Harris was getting as many touches as Griffin was this past year, he could have put up even more similar or perhaps even higher numbers than Griffin did this past season. And I want to make it clear, guys, I'm not trying to argue that Harris is a better player overall than Griffin. He's not. Griffin is going to go down probably as a Hall of Famer and is one of the certainly one of the best players in Clippers franchise history. However, for the money and for the system and for the versatility in youth, Harris is almost definitely the better fit for the team. And I mentioned the money there. I want to get into that a little bit more. Griffin, with that giant deal Clippers gave him last summer, would be taking a lot of cap space, would be taking a lot of money out of Clippers' pockets, whereas Harris is making about half the money Griffin is. And moving forward, Harris could be a real bargain signing if Clippers give him an extension or give him a new contract after next season, which I'll be talking about more in tomorrow's episode of Locked on Clippers. So now that player showcase is over, I want to give my brief take on what's been going on with the Toronto Raptors. Having been swept for the second straight year in the playoffs by the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Raptors are now considering firing Coach of the Year candidate and Coach of the Year award recipient Dwayne Casey. Seen as a bold move by some, I think it's far from the right option. LeBron James is a big ball of destruction when he plays against most NBA teams, but he's something a little extra when it comes to the Toronto Raptors. He kicks it in another gear that only really gets entered when he plays the Raptors, supposedly the biggest threat to his Cavs this season since they had the top record in the Eastern Conference. But after his Cavs swept DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry's Raptors in the conference semis for the second straight season at that, it's becoming more and more evident that Toronto's issues run deeper than James and Dwayne Casey, for that matter, as well. Me personally, I think it's clear that the issue was more based on the roster than the coach, and it's all very similar to what happened with the Clippers a few years back. The Raptors have a talented yet underperforming big three, if you can call it that, in Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and Serge Ibaka. Lowry was never all that great until he came to Toronto. He was drafted by the Memphis Grizzlies and played there for a few seasons. Didn't amount to much, but also didn't get a lot of playing time. Later went to Houston, where he kind of became had a little cult following, that sort of thing. He was a good player for what he was and that kind of thing, but again, never really reached explosive levels of stardom. Until he went to Toronto, he's been an all-star most of the seasons he's been there now. And things like that make me question whether he's more of a system guard than a truly great player. I'm not questioning whether he's a great player overall, but just, you know, would Lowry average those same kind of numbers and get that same kind of recognition that he's getting right now with a team other than Toronto? And with that question, I think the answer is no. And DeRozan is a two guard that can't shoot the three. DeMar DeRozan shot 31% for three this season. Certainly underwhelming numbers for a guy that's playing in the new sort of modern NBA where three-point shooting is relied on more heavily than ever before. And Serge Ibaka, like I mentioned earlier, he's a shell of the defensive stalwart he was during his time in Oklahoma City. Ibaka, during his first few years in OKC, averaging almost four blocks a game, you know, 3.7, 3.5 per game, a couple of seasons in a row there. Now a little over a block per game, and his numbers aren't as impressive as they were before. You know, he's not as much of a he doesn't play as big a role in this offense and defense as he used to with the Thunder, but still, the Raptors are paying a lot for his contract, and they're paying a lot to keep him there in Toronto, and I think that given the level he's performing, that sort of thing, certainly underwhelming in that system. And until Dwayne Casey came in, the Raptors really weren't all that great of a team. They've improved vastly since he became head coach of the team in 2011, improving the team's win-loss record over the previous season in all but one season, and making the playoffs in all but two. In addition to that, this season he coached the Raptors to a 59-win season, which was the most in franchise history. And the Raptors haven't been around for a long time. They were an expansion team that was brought in back in 1996. Still, though, a 59-win season is really impressive, especially considering the Clippers haven't had a season that, you know, with that high of a win rate, a win percentage or win total ever. So what Casey's done in Toronto has been really special. I think he's a fantastic coach and certainly was deserving of that award. But like I was saying, I think this issue goes beyond the regular season, the Raptors and that sort of thing. And once the playoffs roll around, the Raptors become a different team. And I think that falls more on Lowry and DeRozan than does anyone else. Obviously, upgrading at these positions is easier said than done. There is an abundance of great guards in this modern NBA. However, trying to negotiate contracts and trades and that sort of thing to get better players for players than you're offering, it's, like I said, it's a lot easier said than done. So I just don't feel like Casey deserves the heat for any of this, really. A duo of Lowry and DeRozan just isn't going to work in today's NBA, in today's East, and against LeBron James and the rest of the conference if your goal is to make the NBA Finals. If it's not, then, you know, Lowry and DeRozan are going to be great guys, going to get you to where you want to be. But if your goal is, you know, championship or bust, then it's going to be a bust. It's the same way that the duo of Chris Paul and Blake Griffin wasn't going to work and get to the Finals. Like, those two had more issues than just those on court. But still, that was a team that had a ceiling below the NBA Finals, much like the Raptors do now. And I just don't see how it's possible to think that firing Casey, who was just named Coach of the Year by his peers, is the right move, while you still expect Lowry and DeRozan to be the guys to carry you to the NBA Finals. I mean, they might be better than John Wall and Bradley Beal in the regular season, but come playoff time, expecting those two to accomplish more than Wall and Beal can just feels foolish to me. You know, you either work to surround the two that you have with better talent, or put one of them on the trade block, because, like I said, their ceiling just isn't the Finals, and it's as simple as that. So that's going to be my rant for today, guys. I'm sorry if that went long for you. That's going to do it for today's show as well. I hope you enjoyed listening, and thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow's show will wrap up this week, meaning Weekly News Roundup will make its return. In addition, I'll be talking about why Danilo Gallinari was a failed project and why making room to re-sign Tobias Harris after next season is crucial. Thank you so much for listening to today, Clipper Nation. Once again, I am Garrett Korpenning, and I hope you enjoyed today's show. You can find more from the Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other online podcast platforms. I'll catch you guys tomorrow to wrap up the week. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and I will see you then.